Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing founder. I think that this story is going to be awesome. You know, it's definitely a story, you know, that is quite inspiring. A story of a professional athlete, you know, a professional soccer player that ended up, you know, hanging up the boots, you know, on his best time to be able to pick up the business side of things and take, you know, the career and his life to the next level. We're going to be talking about raising capital, you know, the ups and downs on that. Also tackling a well-defined market, and then also how to think about being patient, you know, with the input and what kind of output you get when you are a founder, no? Again, the building, the scaling, the financing, all of that good stuff that we like to hear. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Casper Henningsen. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be on, Alejandro.
So born in Denmark, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah, so Denmark is a very small country in the north of Europe, and it's definitely not the worst place you could be born. So feel quite lucky that that was the place. That said, you know, being born and raised by an uneducated single mom, two kids, and you know, a lot of tough love, and you know, we need to take care of making a living, and that was sort of like, you know, just the premise growing up. So as a young kid, I think, you know, I pretty quickly learned the concept of imagination and dreaming, and kind of like setting a future flag that you start to construct a reality around. And in my case, that became, from the age of five, it became soccer and it became sports. And I became relentless, dedicated around achieving the goal of becoming a professional soccer player. And that was definitely, if just one sentence on my youth, that was writing that chapter. At the age of 15, I signed my first youth contract. And at the age of 19 or 20, I signed my first full-time contract. And had 12 years as a professional playing at the highest league in Denmark. So,
what was that like for you? Because I mean, when you are signing up for anything, you know, when you're 15 and now it's like your dream, what you had dreamed with, you know, all your childhood of, you know, when you were getting out and playing some games with friends or grabbing a ball and hitting it against a wall, you know, and just trying to improve and watching TV. What is that feeling where all of a sudden you're 15 years old, which obviously you're still not an adult, but you get, you know, that opportunity, that possibility opening in front of your eyes? How do you go about not losing your mind and just thinking that you're God?
It's a pretty weird feeling because, as I said, you develop sort of like a superpower, which is you can construct a reality you don't live in, but you kind of like have all the emotions of being in it. So I still recall that day where you signed the contract. And now it was actually reality. It didn't really feel that much different from what I anticipated. It was sort of like, okay, now that part happened. Now I need to become a full-time pro. I need to take the next step. So in a weird way, I would say you already had the feeling. It was just a question of when is it going to be reality? And sort of like that was my view on it from the age of five. I knew it would happen. It was the only reality I could construct, but pretty crazy thinking about and zooming out that you can do it in that way. But that was really the feeling, Alejandro, kind of like I knew this would happen. I put in my input every day, worked incredibly hard, and I was very patient with my outcomes.
And how was that like for you too in terms of discipline? Because now, you know, it's like, hey, you sign a contract. You are 15 still, but you have a duty, you have responsibility now to deliver.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's two sides to it. You know, one is that you go through different stages as a pro, because, you know, one is that you have all the aspirations as a youth, but then you get into teenage years and there's a lot of distractions and there will be a lot of defeats and there'll be a lot of no's, and you will, you know, so you need to get through all of these kind of like different hurdles that definitely gonna challenge how much do you want it. So I think that's one part of it, which is really, you know, you're really getting challenged on your character and you know, how determined are you, because you're going to be pushed and you're going to be challenged by the simple way that life's going to distract you. And you need to say no to to a bunch of things. So that's one thing. The other thing is that your input needs to compound to a very serious level of outcome. There is only 1% that starts playing football that even can make a living of it by the generation. So you really need to trust that you can not only overcome the hurdles, but you're also going to compound quality through your input every day.
And what was that moment like where, I mean, obviously here you're scaling through the ranks, you're going through different teams, you know, maybe you're changing positions, you know, from striker to midfielder, whatever that was. You're 25 years old. 25 years old. I mean, nowadays, I mean, you look at Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, he goes all the way up to like 40 years old and he's like making $400 million a year. You know, Messi, you know, same thing, making $200 million a year, probably 37, 38. Now, you're 25 years old. You're still, you know, like at the point where most players like start to develop their breakthrough years in terms of earning years. And on your end, you start to think that something is off. What was that like for you and what happened?
Yeah, great question. I would say that luckily I was able to zoom out and look at the trajectory and see myself in competition with all the others, professional soccer players. And what I saw was that I was definitely in progress and I was developing, but I was not developing in a pace and in a quality that were able to compete at the level that I wanted. And there you can do two things. You can either stay in the game and use the next 10 years, which is your best years, trying to, you know, write a new chapter. Or you can say all the learnings I had now, I could start writing a new chapter, which is how am I going to play Champions League at business side. And I came to the conclusion that I wanted to spend my best years with all of my hard-earned learnings to try to write that chapter instead of trying to write a new chapter within football. So it was a really tough decision, but I think the only way I could make it was that I was able to zoom out and look at the competition. If you waste 2 or 3 years in such an intense environment, you're going to have a hard time pivot and actually underwrite your trajectory.
So how do you get into consulting? Because, I mean, here you are a soccer player. It's not like you have a master's degree or anything like that, which is the typical, you know, thing that you would see consultants do. You know, they do the MBA and then, you know, they get, you know, recruited by the consulting firms. I mean, in your case, all you had was the education of soccer. So, I mean, that's quite the switcheroony there and, you know, and to be able to land the job.
Yeah, that's right. You know, in that way, I'm self-motivated. I'll learn, but I was also very lucky. It was a Nordic rooted consultant, see around 350 people. The founder of that company were a former professional. So there was a, you know, direct correlation. He knew the skills, he knew the attitude, he knew the mindset that it took me to become a professional. And I think he betted on that I was so hungry to prove myself that I pretty quickly with that attitude would learn the skills and become very, you know, productive for the company and have a good journey. So I don't think it could be happening in any company, but it specifically this consultancy, you know, had that culture and that belief that if you have the attitude and you have the mindset, you know, there is a chance to build the skills.
What was that thing, you know, what was that like to be able to apply some of the skills, some of the leadership, sportsmanship that also you had developed and that you had acquired from those 12 years playing soccer as a professional into the business world, especially, you know, with Kunde & Co, where you are now like engaging, you know, with a bunch of different companies?
It was crazy. I think mentality-wise, I found a culture that was kind of like sports. But then you start putting in the craft. And what I pretty quickly learned was that there is a big difference between business and elite sport. And elite sport is much harder and it's much more intense and has so much more friction than being in business. In sports, if you don't remove friction and you're not brutally honest week by week, you're going to lose on Sunday. In business, you need to be patient. You need to have communication. You need to have leadership styles. You need to learn all of the softer skills that makes people come together and actually progress. And I needed to have that learning the hard way. So that was one realization that in sports, you take for granted that you remove friction weekly. You don't do that in business life. Second, what I also learned was to acquiring skills by really being powerful on my input, we're no different than training and building skills in sports. So that was a direct correlation. I could become in, insanely good at something and write a new narrative if my input were impatient and with high quality, and I trusted the outcome and were pretty patient around my outcome. So I would say you pretty quickly learn you can write new narratives, you can become very skilled at something if you put in the input. But my biggest learning the first 3 or 4 or 5 years were that you can say the way you interact are totally different than you do at sports.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So let's talk about now being a consultant, right? And now, you know, you got all these lessons learned, you know, from your previous journey as a professional athlete. Now you're applying them into the world of business, but now you're also developing new skill sets, like, for example, becoming a consultant, specifically when it comes to problem solving, right? Because you're now consulting these companies on strategy, on issues, whatever they're dealing with. But it's all about helping, you know, with really generating those solutions. When it comes to a framework for problem solving and what you got, you know, out of those, you know, let's say 4 years that you were a consultant and really figuring out problems, what was your biggest take as to how to tackle, you know, resolving a problem and going up about finding, you know, what's the best way to go?
But that you're absolutely right. You're absolutely correct. That was my biggest toolbox. It was my biggest learning, how to solve problems. I think if you have that skill set and you are able to articulate it, you know, you can be very productive and very successful due to many ways. So we really, you know, you're getting learned how to solve problems and how to orchestrate and architect sort of like a design around it, not only for yourself, but also for a group of people that needs some momentum and go in a direction. So, you know, that is the superpower you gain from being consultant. It's really this idea of having a framework where you break down a very complicated product or a problem into a series of actions, and then you get momentum in it by accumulating energy in a group of people. And when I learned that, and when I also think kind of like I was on top of that, I was also, that should be my biggest learning in this. I think I'm ready for something new.
So then let's get to that point. How do you really go through that process of, I want to start something on my own, I want to control my own destiny, and this is what it looks like?
Yeah, so when I was doing consulting, I became a senior partner at the firm. And when you do that, I had 6 or 7 different units under my leadership. One of the units were insights. And so my job was to build an appealing proposition around insights and make that tangible and attractive for the business and the customers of ours. And very quickly, I became, you know, very passionate about that specific unit and what it could do if it was placed right. But I also saw all the problems with the format. And doing that for 4 years with quite an amount of intensity, I saw an opportunity to go and solve the problem I felt on my own body in a more sustainable way as an entrepreneur. So that became my bridge into starting my own. I realized the problem, I lived it, and I wanted to do something about it.
So what ended up becoming, you know, GetY? What are you guys doing at GetY?
Yeah, so we are in the consumer insight space or customer insight space. The customer insight space is pretty broad and well established, and it's a service-first industry. And what we do is we build technology and advanced models to produce great insights on very rich video data, pretty unstructured data, and distribute these insights into decision-making in workflows, basically, at the operating units at a company. And the way we put a different proposition to market is we've built the first and only digital researcher, a synthetic researcher, where we have a technology stack that replicates the workflow of a researcher. And then we've built proprietary models to create content in that workflow, which essentially gives a very strong proposition. We sell work, we don't sell software. And we have long-term advantages on, you can say, the customer experience. We're going to create a fast insight that is very, very filled with substance and quality. And we're going to be very disrupted on price. So you could say we are here to produce insights and distribute them to action. And our way of solving it has been to build the first digital researcher that works kind of like as a researcher you would look at McKinsey or Bain or Ipsos or Kantar, but it's a synthetic model that replicates the workflow and produces the exact same work as they are doing today. And by that, we have a very strong differentiation and proposition in the market.
That's amazing. So what is the monetization? How do you guys make money?
Yeah. So when I say we charge for work, I really mean it. So work in our industry are an insight done. So we are not selling a feature set, or we don't sell a subscription to any tooling. You buy a subscription for the amount of work you want to have done, and you can start that work simultaneously at night, in the morning, in the weekends. Our digital researcher doesn't care. So you're going to be charged by the work our researcher do for you and the amount of insights it delivers to your organization, rather than paying, you know, a subscription for a feature set or tooling.
So in your guys' case, you've also raised some money. I mean, I know that that's brutal, raising money, especially, you know, for your first time company. So how was that like?
Tons of learnings. And I think if I can, my biggest learning is, you know, to really design and construct a cap table long term. But how it was, we've raised just north of $50 million. The last round were $35 million raised by Peaks Bank Capital. But we had seven races before that big round. And I can tell you something, 5 years ago, coming with a proposition to the market, which were, I'm going to build deep learning, I'm going to build AI, and I'm going to replace human work by a digital worker, that was not sexy. And that took 7 years, that took 5 years, seven rounds to get to that stage where you then had the product ready and you could start monetizing.
Because in total, how much capital have you guys raised to date?
I think it's $55 million in equity and around $10-15 million in debt.
That's amazing. How do you think about equity and debt? How do you go about it differently when it comes to raising one or raising the other?
Yeah, it's you know, my rule of thumb is you shouldn't do debt if it's operational and it's, you know, day to day. That is not a good way to fund your business. Any day of the week would do that by equity. So I really use it for these two purposes. Equity is for, you know, having a sustainable, you know, operating unit, and debt could be for acceleration or things around that you want to take care of. So that has been sort of like my guiding star. But as a young entrepreneur being first, you know, and you know that yourself, in the first couple of rounds, you don't really have the optionality. You come with an empty box and an empty bank account. And it's, you know, it's just to make a living. You know, can we continue another quarter or two? And I would say it's sort of like that were the first four or five rounds where, you know, we didn't really have optionality. So we needed to take what we could get.
So, talking about the equity side of things, because I mean, when you're raising money from equity investors, or even when you have, you know, employees, like in your guys' case, you have over 48 employees. What is, like, vision is a big one, right? Because they're all betting on vision. They're all betting into the future that you're living into. So with that being said, if you were to go to sleep tonight, Casper, and you wake up in a world where the vision of GetWise is fully realized, what does that world look like?
It is a world where companies and consumers or customers are in alignment. And what we innovate and what we produce are in sync with the market needs and the attractability. So we actually reduce tons of waste, but we also make work meaningful for the company. So I'm really envisioning a company that operates with consumer and customer centricity at the heart of their decision making. And to do that, we need to create a complete new insight that are able to be injected in how companies operate. And I think that's what we are trying to do.
So I know that it has been quite the journey too when it comes to patience and input and how to think about them. And I know too that there is a lot of founders, and myself included, where, you know, it's tough, you know, not to get impatient and to think too much about the finish line and forget about that journey that gets you there. So what can you tell us about patience and input and what leads with it?
I think you need to be incredibly impatient with your input. Put your best quality every day in all the hours you are on. But you need to be extremely patient with your outcome. So to write a big narrative, like it was for me from the age of 5 becoming a professional sportsman, it is exactly the same when you want to write a big narrative in industry or starting your own business. You need to write a great narrative and a scope of orientation. And then you need to be incredibly impatient with your input, but you need to be very patient with the outcomes. Otherwise, you're going to be derailing, you're going to be defocused, and you're going to take bad decisions along the journey.
So let's say I was to put you now into a time machine, you know, as we're thinking about decisions, lessons learned, all that stuff. And I put you to a time machine and I bring you back in time to that moment that you were giving your notice at Kunde & Co. And basically to embark in really taking ownership of your own destiny. And right there on the spot, you're able to have a chat with that younger Casper that is coming out of the headquarters of Kunde & Co. after giving your resignation letter. And you're able to sit down that younger Casper, let's say for a coffee, and you're able to give right there on the spot one piece of advice to that younger Casper. You know, what would that be and why, you know, on launching a business, that piece of advice on launching a business, that one piece of advice that you would give to that younger Casper and why, given what you know now?
I would empathize a lot with what we just talked about. So the younger Casper would say, you know, have the right orientation, write a big enough narrative that is appealing and makes you passionate, but be extremely focused in building your business in sequences that allows you to control your cap table and build it in sequence, step by step, instead of just being all over. So you're working with a paradox, which is your scope of orientation or your vision needs to be controlled by a very, very focused and more segmented way of building your business. And I learned that the hard way. If you don't do that, you're gonna be hit on cap table. You're gonna be deoriented. So you need both. You need the very ambitious scope of perspective, but when you break that down and you build your business, you need to be extremely segmented into small chapters that you then write and complete before you start another one.
Okay, so for you too, right? When it comes to developing yourself, because I mean, it has been 7 years of really pushing this thing, and obviously, you want to always make sure that you're growing at the same pace as the company. And you are a competitive beast. I mean, you are a professional athlete, right? I mean, you know what it takes, and you know the discipline and the hard work and dedication that you got to put into it. Applying that to business, to developing yourself so that the company doesn't outpace you. How did you go about that to be able to be at the same level as the company was going from one cycle to the next?
Yeah, great question. One, you need to be aware of what stages you're in and what the company calls for. So you need to be able to zoom out and have the right assessment on the different chapters and the different needs of your organization throughout building the company. I think that's first. Two, when you then are going into chapters or needs that you have gaps within your current capability, I think you need to be brutal honest with yourself around what is my weaknesses and where do I need to develop? And then you need to be relentless focused on your input, building these capabilities. For me, as I also mentioned, one of my biggest kind of like learnings has really to become a leader. And I've worked very intense on that, both, you could say, by the natural kind of like extension you would do, but also simple things like trying to become a good dad, become a good, you know, friend, become a good husband, and stuff like that. I just found there's so many synergies between being a good person and being a good leader. And so you are absolutely right. I think there's many sequences, there's many capabilities that you need to acquire throughout such a journey, but it all starts with, what are the different chapters? What do they call for? And where's my weaknesses or strength that I need to apply within a certain chapter? And be brutal honest with yourself around that. If you're going to be wrong here, you're probably going to build a, you know, a less attractive company.
So this is amazing, Casper. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are super inspired and that are wondering, you know, how they could reach out and say hi, and then also to learn more about Get Why. What can you tell them?
Please reach out on LinkedIn. I'm very active there and would be happy to engage.
Amazing. Well, Casper, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.